Now let's continue on. There's another example you can find in Deuteronomy 4, or Numbers 14 in Deuteronomy, the first chapter, where after the spies came back from spying out the land, you see, God intended to bring them into the promised land during the Feast of, so they would be there for the Feast of Tabernacles. So they would be dwelling in the land. And the spies came back, discouraged all the people. They moaned and groaned all night, accused God. So God said, all right, you're not going to go. You are going to wander another 38 and a half years. 40 days spying out the land. A day for a year, you're going to be 40 years. So what happened then? What happened then? Verse 41 of Deuteronomy 1. Now here's an example of false repentance. Once God has said he's going to do something, tells you to do it, he will bless you. And they said, no, we won't go. So then God gave the judgment. Okay? Now, verse 41, we find out that you can't go and do what God says at a different time than when God said to do it. Okay? Verse 41, Deuteronomy, the first chapter. And you answered and said to me, we've sinned against the Lord. Doesn't matter if you confess your sin when God has already made the judgment in this case. We will go up and fight according to all that the Lord our God commanded us. And when each one of you buckled on his weapons of war, you were ready to go up into the hill. But the Lord said to me, say to them, do not go up nor fight, for I am not among you. You will be beaten by your enemies. But they didn't do it. Verse 43, so I spoke to you, and you would not hear, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord and went up presumptuously into the hill. And the Amorites who lived in the mountain came down against you and chased you even as bees do and destroyed you in Seir to Hormath. And you returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord would not hearken to your voice nor give ear to you. So then they stayed at Kadesh many days. All right. You cannot presume to do what God tells you to do in the way that you think you need to do it separately from the command of God. Now you can apply that to how many things? Everything. The Sabbath day. The holy days. Clean and unclean meats. Tithes and offerings. All of the things of God, see? You could apply that. So they finally did come into the promised land. Now come to Joshua, the fifth chapter, and we're going to see that God uses his holy days to accomplish major things that he has planned to do. That's why the Passover becomes important. Day four becomes important. Now, in this case, the Passover was not, chapter 5, the book of Joshua, okay, the Passover day was not in the middle of the week. It was rather on a Friday, actually a Sabbath, okay? So here's what they did. They came in, crossed the Jordan, went over to Gilgal, and verse 9, Joshua 5, the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore, the name of this place shall be called Gilgal, is called Gilgal to this day. The children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at evening in the plains of Jericho. They ate the old grain of the land on the next day after the Passover, unleavened cakes and roast new grain in the same day. Then the next day, the manna stopped. Okay? So here we have God using his holy days again. Now, we won't go into other things in the book of Joshua and Judges, but let's come to 1 Kings. here we have a very interesting situation that occurred. Solomon, the son of David, built the temple. God blessed him, appeared to him, and everything. We won't go through the life of Solomon here. But nevertheless, we find when the dedication of the temple occurred, let's come here to 1 Kings chapter 8. 1 Kings chapter 8. And here are all the offerings that they gave, and we will see when the dedication took place and the Feast of Tabernacles both. Now, verse 64, right toward the last of 1 Kings, the 8th chapter. And on that day, the king sanctified the middle of the court before the house of the Lord, and there he offered the burnt offering and the grain offering, the fat of peace offering, because the bronze altar before the Lord was too small to contain the burnt offerings and grain offerings and the fat of the peace offering. At that time, Solomon held a feast, and all Israel with him, a great congregation from the entering in of Hamath to the river of Egypt before the Lord, 7 days and 7 days, even 14 days. Now notice verse 66, because this gives us a time frame. Notice the two portions of 7 days are counted separately. Now notice verse 66, and on the eighth day, what day is that? That's the last great day, because it's the Feast of Tabernacles. We'll see this confirmed in the book of Chronicles here in just a minute. And they blessed the king, went to their tents, joyful and glad of heart for all the good that the Lord had done for David, for his servant, and for Israel, his people. All right. Now let's come to the parallel account here in the book of Chronicles. Let's get the right one. 1 Chronicles, I believe, chapter 5. No, it's 2 Chronicles 5. Beg your pardon. 2 Chronicles chapter 5. Here we have that God put his presence in the temple on the first day of the seventh month, being the Feast of Trumpets. Now, this is an overview. There are other things we can use to fill in how we prove that, and we prove that by using the information we just covered, 7 days and 7 days, and on the eighth day sent them away. Okay? So we'll piece all of that together right now. But this is important to understand, that now they are in the land, now they have peace from all their enemies, now the temple of God is complete, now the temple of God is being sanctified, and it's being dedicated. All right, so this is the dedication, chapter 5. Let's see what happened when they came to a certain point. All right? They put the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies. After they did that, verse 11, and it came to pass when the priests came out of the holy place, for all the priests present were sanctified and did not wait by course. And the Levitical singers, all of them, so it lists all of them, being clothed in white linen and having cymbals and harps and lyres, stood at the east end of the altar, and with them 120 priests sounding with silver trumpets. And it came to pass, as the trumpeters and the singers were as one, to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Lord. And when they lifted up their voice with the silver trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised the Lord, saying, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever, that the house was filled with a cloud, even the house of the Lord. Now, how did God do it when the tabernacle was dedicated? The same way on the first day of the first month. So then that led up to keeping the Passover. Here in this case, this is the first day of the seventh month, being the Feast of Trumpets. That's why there are all the trumpets there. Now, we will see the proof of this here in just a bit. All right. Come over here to chapter 7. I'm over here to chapter 7. Now we get a date, okay? Chapter 7, verse 8. And at the same time, Solomon kept the feast 7 days, and all Israel, a very great congregation. So we find that we read earlier, 7 days to dedicate the temple. Now we have the feast. Notice, verse 9. And in the 8th day, they made a solemn assembly and kept the dedication of the altar 7 days, and the feast 7 days. And on the 23rd day of the 7th month, he sent the people away into their tents. All right, now that is the last great day, is it not? All right, so what do we have? 7 days and 7 days. The first 7 days started with the Feast of Trumpets. God put his presence there. We have a type of this with Christ returning, do we not? Actually, literally coming on the earth on the Feast of Trumpets. So we see all of these parallels as we go through the Bible, see? This is why it's good to do an overview. Now, what comes between trumpets and tabernacle? Atonement. See, so they kept the feast of the altar 7 days. That ended it. Then you had day 8 and day 9. Then you had atonement. And then that's the 10th day. And then you come down to the 15th day, 7 days plus the 8th day. So this gives us proof that since God put his presence in the temple on the first day of the Feast of Dedication, that had to be on the Feast of Trumpets, because we get a date right here. 23rd day of the 7th month, he sent the people away. Okay? Now, when we come to the New Testament, now what you will have to do is, let's do this. Let's come to Luke, the first chapter. Now, that's why with the book, The Appointed Times of Jesus the Messiah, when you read about the birth of Christ, as I wrote in the book, God hides his plan in plain sight, but you have to rightly divide the word of truth. You have to be keeping the Sabbath. You have to know the holy days of God. And when you do, everything falls into place and makes sense. Okay? Now, how do we know when Jesus was born? The world says December 25th. See? But that's like saying, up, let us make gods. How does God let us know? Well, it tells us in the book of Daniel, the last chapter, that at the end, the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Who are the wise? They're the ones who keep the commandments of God. They're the ones who love God and keep his Sabbath and his holy days and know the word of God. Now, here's why the Catholics and the Protestants, though they have the Bible and they could understand it, will never understand it, because they don't obey God. They claim the birth of Christ, they claim the death of Christ, but do not know when it occurred. So God gave us a few clues. Now, let's read it here in Luke, the first chapter. Let's pick it up here in verse 5. Now, let's ask a question. Who did God give the authority to bring the laws, offer the sacrifices, pronounce the feast of God? Who did he give that authority to? The priest. There we go. So let's read it right here. So how did God begin to fulfill the coming of Christ? By coming through the priesthood. Okay? There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest of the course of Abijah. Now, what does that mean? What does the course of Abijah mean? Well, if you've never read the Old Testament, if you never read how David divided down the priest into 24 courses. And what he did, he had the priest work at the temple according to the courses, from noon Sabbath to noon Sabbath, beginning in the first month. So if this is the eighth course, what can you do? Because it is, the course of Abijah is the eighth course, if you go back and see how David organized that, even have a marginal reference, 1 Chronicles 24:10. Now this tells you the approximate time then, doesn't it? Matter of fact, you can pick out the exact week. In addition to working for 1 week, when they had the three festival seasons, Passover, unleavened bread, Pentecost, and later then tabernacles, all the courses of the priest would work. So we have Abijah is the eighth course. And you can read in the book, Appointed Times of Christ, how you count down to, we know that this occurred during the weeks. There's a 2-week time frame here, the eighth week and the ninth week. And the middle day of that is Pentecost. Now, what can you do with that? Then you can figure pretty close to when John the Baptist was born, right? So that's why in the book Appointed Times and also in the Harmony of the Gospels, we have the calculated Hebrew calendar bringing down all of these days to the birth of Christ and all of the facts involved in it. But it starts out here with the announcement of John the Baptist. Very interesting. From there, we can project forward and understand when the conception of Jesus took place within a 2-week time frame, chapter 1, and let's read it here in verse 36. Now behold, Elizabeth, your kinswoman, has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is the 6th month for her who was called barren. So then if you have the dates that Zechariah served, now you can calculate when Mary became pregnant. And you can carry forward, and what happens? Lo and behold, you come to the Feast of Trumpets on a weekly Sabbath in 5 BC, which was the most likely day. You can't prove it totally, absolutely, but knowing the pattern of the holy days, that was the Feast of Trumpets. Okay? So God uses his holy days. All right. Now we come to the ministry of Christ. Since we're here in the book of Luke, let's go to Luke 4. Now remember the number 4. This year we have the same sequence of days in the calculated Hebrew calendar as when Jesus began his ministry. You can read this also in the book, The Appointed Times. Jesus began his ministry on the Day of Atonement. That's why he went out there and was fasting 40 days. That Day of Atonement, that's when he had to do it, because that Day of Atonement was the beginning of the Jubilee year. And Jesus' ministry was a what? A Jubilee ministry. That Day of Atonement was on Wednesday, just like we have this year. What day is that of the week? The 4th day. See? So I want you to tie that number 4 in all the way through. See? Day number 4, God set the appointed times. Day number 4 was the day that God brought the covenant to Abraham, Genesis 15. Day number 4, that the Passover for the children of Israel was in the middle of the week. Okay? Day number 4, that Jesus began his ministry on the Day of Atonement. Now, you come forward with the time, and because there were 2 leap years, adding in an extra month in those 2 leap years, you have that he began his ministry with 40 days, okay, and that was probably 4 days after his baptism. So you have 4 and then 40. And then you have for his ministry 44 months. Now, let's look at something interesting here. Let's look at the chart we have in the appendices. Okay? Now you will see why we have the appendices that we do here. Yeah. The chart I want to go to is page 1280. Page 1280. Now, again, we see something very interesting that ties in with how people try and do things toward God when he says not to do it. Okay? The world believes, because they had to look for a year in which there was a Friday Passover. And the only one they had was 33 A.D. So they say Jesus died in 33 A.D. when he did not. He died in 30 A.D. And it wasn't on the sixth day of the week. He died on the fourth day of the week, because in 30 A.D. the Passover is in the middle of the week. So he started his ministry on the fourth day, his physical ministry, and he ended it on the fourth day. But in this case, it was the Passover day. Now, we've covered about this day. What day is this? When was this day selected? From the foundation of the world. Now, is that not important? Yes, indeed. Because that's the whole central point of reconciling the world. Now, notice, when you look at this chart, according to the calculated Hebrew calendar, coordinated with the Julian calendar, all right? Passover day was the middle of the week. The next day, now when was he buried? Just right as the sun was going down. What day follows the 14th day? The 15th, okay? 15 is the number of rest. Now, he said he would be in the grave 3 days and three nights, correct? And you can't do that from Friday afternoon till Sunday morning. And how can you connect the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ with Ishtar, the female goddess of Babylon? And she was also Isis of Egypt. You can't. See, because when they tell people, the Catholics say, you don't have to read the Bible, but if you read it, you better have a priest there so we can interpret it, because you may go insane. Now, you may go insane trying to find Catholic doctrines in the Bible, though they use scriptures. They're not the doctrines of truth. So therefore, they say, we can preach the Catholic gospel without using the Bible. Now, the Protestants are not quite that blatant. They say that everything was fulfilled in Christ, so therefore we don't have to read the Old Testament. So you see, therefore they follow along with what the Catholics have done. They believe in Easter, they believe in a Friday crucifixion, and they do everything they can to try and justify their beliefs, but it never really fits because they reject the calculated Hebrew calendar. So this is why the chart is in the Bible. Notice, day 5 of the week, 5 is a number of what? 5 is a number of what? Grace, okay? It's the 15th day of the month of Nisan, which is what? 3 times 5, right? Got it, okay? So we see those numbers tied in, okay? And it was also a Sabbath day. Does the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, does God use his holy days and his Passover? Yes. He doesn't use anything else. All right. So we have one night, one day, two nights, two day, third night, third day. All right. Now, he said he would be in the heart of the earth, which is the grave. 3 days and three nights, and that was the only sign. So here you have it, the sign of Jonah, Matthew 12, the only sign. He only needed one sign, did he not? Yes, he did. Now, what did he say of his death? He said of his death that he would rise the third day. When did he die on the Passover day? At 3 p.m. So there's approximately 3 hours from his death until he was finally all wrapped and prepared by Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. Put into the tomb, and the stone rolled over it, and that was beginning the 15th day of the first month. So you have two things going here. Number one, he had to rise from the dead in the tomb right after the third day from his death occurred. Now, but he didn't leave the tomb until sunset because he said he would be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. So you're looking at two threes, time he was dead and the time he was in the earth. Okay? Now, in the book, The Appointed Time of the Messiah, what did we point out? What must he have done? He must have prayed while in the tomb. All right? Now, we come over here to the day that he ascends. Okay? Day 17, the Sabbath, number 7, is overcoming. 17. Isn't it interesting? Seventh day, 17th day of the month. 17 is overcoming. 7 is completion. All right? Then he ascended in the morning on the 18th, the first day of the week. Now, 18 is judgment against the enemy. What did Jesus say concerning his death and resurrection? Who was judged? Satan. He is the enemy. That's why I want you to read chapter 2 in the commentaries and go over those numbers. And I think you're going to find that is going to literally blow your mind. That here, the most important day, the Passover day, then the 3 days and the three nights, and then the ascension to heaven. Now, let's ask the question, why do we not celebrate the resurrection and ascension? Never told us to, but those were two things between God the Father and Jesus Christ. Okay? We are to remember what? His death. And we're also to remember that we are saved by his life. All right. Now, let's come back here to Romans, the 5th chapter. Now, I'll save the rest of this for this afternoon. Okay. But let's look at a couple scriptures here. We also have these in the book, The Appointed Times of Jesus the Messiah. Now, you see, this is why, brethren, we have the Bible in its original order. Now, let's read it here. Verse 6, Romans 5. For even when we were without strength at the appointed time, Christ died for the ungodly. That was the Passover day. Now look at how number 4 fits into that. It was the fourth day of the week. It was in the fourth year of his ministry. It was in the 44th month of his ministry. He started his ministry on the fourth day of the week. Now, let's look at a broader picture, and we will end here. How many divisions are there in the Bible according to its original order? The law, number 1. Prophets, number 2. The writings, number 3. What is number 4? The Gospels and Acts. How many books are devoted to the life of Christ? 4. So again, see how 4 comes up all the time with the ministry of Christ, the Passover of Christ, everything. Okay. Number 5 being the book of Acts then, that is the preaching of the gospel, the preaching of grace, and 5 is the number of grace. So within the Acts And the four Gospels, we have the fourth division of the Bible. Okay? Now, let's carry this one step further. When did the preaching of the gospel really start with the apostles? On Pentecost. Yes. Which is what? 50th day. Yes, indeed. It also involves the number four, because you count Passover 1, first day of unleavened bread 2, last day of unleavened bread 3, Pentecost 4. Isn't that amazing? See how number 4 comes in. Then what do you have after the Acts and the four Gospels? You have the general epistles, the writings of those who were directly with Christ for the 3.5 years. You have James, Peter, John, and Jude. Now then, for all of us carnal people, you have the sixth division, which then are the epistles of Paul, as to how to get out of the mess of human nature and Satan the devil. Then the last one is the book of Revelation, and as you will see in the sermon that I'm going to give when I go down south, the book of Revelation is also structured on the holy days. So I know I've covered a lot of ground here with a lot of numbers, but you go back and you read chapter 2 with all the numerics, and then read the book, The Appointed Times of Jesus the Messiah, and go over those things, and you will be absolutely amazed, because the very thing people do exactly, that's why when we came to Exodus 31 and the keeping of the Sabbaths, and then Exodus 32 with the making of the golden calf. That follows through. God is telling us what to do in chapter 31. Men are saying what they're going to do for God in chapter 32 according to the religions of this world, being i.e. Egypt. And it is sin, and they just don't understand. See? So, that's why it's important that we have the Bible, we have it in its original order, we understand the structure of it, and then everything else fits on that structure. Okay? And you can have full confidence, guaranteed by God, that His Word is true, and He's going to carry everything out according to His will, and He's going to use the Passover and Holy Days to do it. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.